The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Shaq Hislop. So much going on today. Later on in the program, we'll be reflecting on Cristiano Ronaldo very much saving Manchester United at the death as they came from behind to beat Villarreal. Plus, another very bad day at the office for Ronald Koeman as Barcelona lost against Benfica. We'll start things off, though, with the defending champions, Chelsea, in action against Juventus in Turin. Chelsea going into this tie as favourites, given Juventus had no Dybala, no Morata. However, it would be Max Allegri's side that would take all 3 points, thanks to Chiesa's goal just 11 seconds into the second half. Well, for more on this game, let's welcome in, shall we, Jurgen Klinsmann and Craig Burley. Craig, it wasn't supposed to play out like this.
Well, it is. But that's the way Juventus wanted it to play out, and that's why they brought Max Allegri back in. This is the kind of style of play that they tried to get away from when he left the club, and they've gone back to it. It was, you know, not bothered about possession. You just saw the stats there, but really try and be organised. Try and nick the ball on the counter-attack or wait for a Chelsea mistake. Or we saw that a couple of times in the first half. And that's the way they did it, a resolute defence. And they're going to ask teams to break them down, particularly the teams that are stronger. And listen, a little bit like Man City yesterday, it's up to Chelsea to have more guile and more, you know, more invention in the final third and lots of possession. But in my opinion, not enough crosses into the box for Lukaku and not enough quality crosses when they did put it in. And I never felt they would score, Chelsea.
Jurgen, how did Juventus execute this so well?
Yeah, exactly like Craig said. They went back to the old-style Italian school. I mean, they invited Chelsea to take over, to have all the possession in the world. And they sat back and they just counter-broke, you know, here and there. And that very efficient. I think Federico Chiesa was outstanding. He was the player of the match, not only because he scored a beautiful goal, but also he kind of played his role as a false number nine in front of the back three from Chelsea. That the back three of Chelsea never knew what to do. You know, they were just actually there marking the space. And because Cuadrado on the right side, he stayed on the sideline, occupying the flank there, and Bernardeschi was very, very smart, playing in a little bit of a number 10 role. So the Chelsea defense, they never really knew what to do with those guys. But that is Juventus, the old school Juventus, sitting back, you know, giving the opponent the ball, but then sooner or later they're gonna kill you. And that's the way they always did it. Now, is this a step forward for Juventus style wise? I doubt it, but that's Massimiliano Allegri. That's his style, and that's how they beat Chelsea today. And actually, they deserve to beat them today.
This is it, Shaq. Obviously, last season we saw Pirlo come in with a dissertation. This is, I'm going to change things. But sometimes you just need to go back to basics. Well, exactly what Juventus did. And they caught Chelsea just napping, didn't they, at the start of the second half?
Listen, I thought Juventus got their tactics absolutely right on the day, given the players that they were missing, given the opponent. While you can question Juventus' style and everything that you'd heard from them over the last couple of years about going in a different direction, I don't think you can question the performance or the tactics. And Allegri got that right. I thought, for as good as Chiesa was, Bonucci was equally so in playing up in behind Romelu Lukaku. Just allowed him to have the ball in front of him, didn't allow him to turn. I don't think Lukaku got on the end of a single one of those little slide rule balls till the 83rd minute, I believe it was. And then just midfielders track runners. So Lukaku was getting the ball and no one to lay it off to. And in the end, up until that last 10 minutes, I mentioned Lukaku chance. Kai Havertz had a couple of headers that he really should have done better with. Juventus were unbothered and looking for an opportunity up the other end. Chiesa got the goal, but they had chances through Chelsea mistakes where Juventus could have taken the lead. Chiesa and Benedetti, again, could have linked up better. But in the end, for everything we've said about Chelsea going into this season as defending European champions, how much stronger they were with Lukaku, for everything we've said about Juventus and their uncertain start to this season, given what we saw last season, there was only ever going to be one winner in the way that this played out and how Juventus got their tactics right.
Back-to-back defeats now, Craig, for Chelsea in two big games and not scoring either in either one of them. How much of a concern is that going forward?
Well, they didn't score in the City game because they hardly had the ball. And as he said himself, they were timid. And they were almost frightened of City and wary. They had lots of the ball, obviously, in this game. But, you know, the one thing they kept trying to do in both the first half and the second half, and then they made a host of changes, was try and whip that ball into Lukaku's feet when they had so many bodies on the edge of the box. And they were trying these little flicks around the corner. And Juventus were defending narrow. You know, the fullbacks had tucked in a bit, the wide guys had come back, the two midfielders were sitting in front of the back four, and the space was outside. And I think that's why he took Alonso off at halftime and brought Chilwell on. It didn't have any great effect, but they did have a lot of ball down that left side in the first half, but they kept coming back inside, back into Kovacic, tried to go down the middle again. I would have wanted to have seen them in a scenario like this. Now, I know Delitt and Bonucci and Chiellini, when he come on, are very good at defending balls into the box. But Lukaku is very good at attacking balls into the box. And if you're not getting joy right through the middle of Juventus, and that's where they're strong, you've got to try and use that physical presence of Romelu Lukaku that they didn't have last year, and Kai Havertz, who's a big lad as well, by putting really good crosses into the box. Because they were getting no joy the other way, Dan. But when they put balls into the box in general, which was not enough for me, they were just poor deliveries. And so it has been a bad... After a really good start for Chelsea and lots of praise for Tuchel, it's been an eye-opening 10 days or so.
What surprised me, Jürgen, that after Juventus opened the scoring so early on in the second half, you expected more, didn't you, from Chelsea going forward? Chelsea wasn't really tested.
Yeah, I think you could see that Chelsea was struggling, you know, in terms of creativity. Surprising moments, no shots from outside the box. You know, they tried everything, kind of playing through the middle, playing into Lukaku, but obviously De Ligt and Bonucci had Lukaku under control. Havertz had two, three opportunities, headers. I mean, the way to beat a team that goes parks the bus in front of the goal is you got to kind of break through over the wings and then cross it back and find, you know, solutions with headers. Or you have to shoot from a distance. You have to do something there. But there was no creative element in the Chelsea side today. And that's why I think, you know, Juventus deserves a compliment that they very, very efficient, very old school Italian. They got the job done. And at the end, you know, they brought in Chiellini just to clean things up. And at a certain point, you could see six defenders, you know, building the first line and then three midfielders in front of them. And then they have maybe somebody still up front. It was Moise Kean. And that was just kind of just waving for a ball here and there. But that's effective. It got them 3 points. Very, very important 3 points at that stage in the Champions League. So compliment to Juventus today.
Yeah, I think overall, when you take a look at the group standing, chat, Juve and Chelsea are going to finish first and second. Obviously, this is going to be a battle to see who indeed tops Group H. How we saw Zenit with that win over Malmo, who seemed to be very much the whipping boys of this group. So overall, with regards to significance, big picture, this result, is it a big deal?
No.
But it is for Juventus more, obviously, for Chelsea, giving that little bit of momentum.
It's a far bigger plus for Juventus than it is a negative for Chelsea. Because of Juventus' stuttering start to the season and trying to rediscover that identity, whether you want to call it a new or old identity under Max Allegri. For Chelsea, as long as you get out of the group, and you will see Chelsea again start to take better shape, I expect, as the season goes on under Thomas Tuchel. As I said at the start of the season, and I still feel it's the same, I think Chelsea this season is a better outfit than they were last season. And we are talking about a team that won the Champions League last year under Thomas Tuchel's tutelage. Difficult task to repeat, but because you lose 1-0 away from home, especially at a club like Juventus, despite what we've said about them, That is easy to absorb. That's easy to dismiss as one of those results.
So much going on, of course, in the world of football at the moment. To check out all the latest news, be sure to go over to our YouTube channel. Plenty of video content over there. And don't forget to subscribe.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Late drama at Old Trafford. Cristiano Ronaldo's 95th minute winner saw Manchester United come from behind to beat Villarreal by 2-1. What a game this is. Craig Sewell, Mark Ogden joins us as well. Craig, I want to start with you because goodness me, did Ronaldo get his side out of jail today?
Oh, he's bailed his manager out big time. And you know, I said on the show a few days ago that could be the difference between him saving his job and not as Cristiano Ronaldo. Look, this is what I call a papering over the cracks result big time. This is papering over the coaching or lack of it at Man United. You can clearly see what Villarreal under Unai Emery have been trying to do and did try to do in this game. They're in great shape. They played it riskily out from the back, but it was successful for them for the most periods and they created lots of chances. It should have been 2-3 at half-time. It wasn't. United scored a very good goal from a set piece. And listen, I can tell you one thing. It does seem that United work on their set pieces in the training ground because it looks like they don't work on anything else. This was a terrible performance. And yeah, they got a winner from Ronaldo. But trust me, this was a robbery. When you think about the chance Villarreal had as well when De Gea made the save and two Villarreal players almost fell over each other trying to put it in the back of the net. So Solskjaer will see it as 3 points, but anybody with half a brain in their head can look at this and say, wow, where is the real progress in terms of the performance?
But it's all about Cristiano Ronaldo in the end, Mark.
It is, well, I have to agree, you know, 100% with what Craig says. It does paper over the cracks. And the one thing that I see when I watch United at the moment is that you never get the sense that they are in control of a game. It's always chaotic. You know, it's either chaos at the back or it's some crazy moment up front with Ronaldo or Lingard or Cavani. There's no sense that United have got a grip of the game, that the control and the tempo of the game. It was all over the place. They had no midfield tonight. There was just fresh air in midfield. There was nothing. So they'll say, yeah, they won the game. It stops the rot. But it doesn't show me anything. It doesn't show us anything that United are on the path to being a team, a cohesive team, rather than a group of individuals. So all the problems that Solskjaer has had in the past are still there. Look, to be fair to him tonight, he got his substitutions right. We've criticised him about his poor substitutions or lack of substitutions in recent times, but his substitutions paid off tonight. But still, there's nothing in that performance tonight which told me that they're now on the right track. It's, you take Ronaldo out of that team and, well, you take his goals out of that team and who knows where they'd be.
But it's Ronaldo, Jack.
Yeah. Listen, and sometimes it's difficult to be this critical about a team after they've won. The truth is, you look at United's performance, you look at who had games or who had any kind of contribution to remember. Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes.
David De Gea.
And for me, I thought David De Gea was the man of the match. But you look at the rest of that squad. You look at even the substitutes who came on, and I know Alex Telles, with that incredible strike to bring them back even. But his, as a game, I don't think he had that good a game. And there is nothing from anybody else that I can recall. And while, yes, we talk about Ronaldo and that'll be the headline, I thought David De Gea was, as I say, was their man of the match for his saves in keeping the team in it at 0-0. And then I do believe that United maybe dominated the last 20, 25 minutes. That was more a case of Villarreal running out of steam. David De Gea produced an incredible save to keep it at 1-1. But it was more United's game to close things out. But we are talking about Manchester United at home, and all we have to resort on is two players, two outfield players, and the opposition running out of gas for them to get anything.
Let me put it another way, Dan. They're in a group with no real so-called big hitters. Atalanta are a decent attacking side and have been for a couple of years. Young Boys of Bern are, you know, decent, but, you know, average at this level at best, and they've already beaten United. Villarreal are what you would call a good Europa League side under a man who's won the Europa League many times, and Unai Emery. But, you know, none of them have anywhere near the budget or playing squads of Man United. And yet, when we look at this table and we talk about the other teams in this show, and after bad results for City and for Chelsea and, you know, Liverpool won, we look at the tables and say, yeah, but they're going to be all right. These big boys will go out. Can anybody really look at that table and say, Man United will, yeah, forget the performance. Man United will easily get out of this group with none of the real big boys in it. I think that's hard to put that case forward, because if they play like that in Villarreal, they won't win. If they play like that in Italy, they won't win. And so when people talk about it's all about results, yes, it is at the end of the day, but performances like that won't continue to bring you those results. But at some point, it will dry up for Cristiano Ronaldo when United are playing like that. And that would be the concern for me. It's not the fact that, you know, they played badly tonight. It's the fact that they played badly tonight. They played badly against West Ham. They played badly against Young Boys of Bern. They played badly against Southampton and others, and maybe have scraped a result here and there for whatever reason. But that, again, going over this point, is just completely, I think, painting over a coaching system there that has no clear idea of what he wants to do with this group of players.
Mark, there is a feeling, and maybe because we're outside of the UK, we have this stronger feeling that Ollie is kind of protected within the media in the UK, because the number of ex-Manchester United pros that are there, and a lot of people accuse us of being anti-United, anti-Solskjaer, wanting them to fail. But the fact of the matter is, when we look at the money that they've spent and look what they're achieving within that team so far this season and some of the laboured results they've achieved, it seems that Ollie's got a special protection around him. Is that fair?
I'm not sure it is fair. I think generally the reason why Ole Solskjaer seems safe to me is because I think it's the owners and Ed Woodward, the chief executive, have been so burnt by having Jose Mourinho and prior to that Louis van Gaal, two very, very kind of strong personality managers who will criticise the ownership, that they just like having Solskjaer there, who is so inoffensive and meek and mild that he doesn't trouble them. And I think Solskjaer also has this strange kind of hold on the fans who, you know, they're still basking in 1999, the guy who scored a goal as a substitute in 1999, a big goal by all, you know, let's be honest. But still, this nostalgia fix at United, it's all about looking back, and it needs to be about looking forward. And in terms of the criticism from the former players, yes, they got stuck into Mourinho, the likes of Scholes and Ferdinand and Neville. They haven't done so yet with Solskjaer, but, you know, Gary Neville's had a bit of a go, Paul Scholes had a bit of a go. They're getting to ask the questions now. But I do think that Solskjaer's got this strange kind of force field around him, because he's great for the owners. He doesn't criticise. He's very statesmanlike. He says the right things. He praises the fans. But eventually, surely, somebody eventually will say, this is like the Emperor's New Clothes. There's nothing happening here. There's no progress. There's no sign of not this horrible word, this philosophy. What is Solskjaer's philosophy? We don't know. You watch them play. You know, what are they trying to do? And I don't think that they've won a game this season or in recent times because of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. There was, you know, Craig was talking about the group they're in with Villarreal and Atalanta. Villarreal will win games because of Unai Emery. Atalanta will win games because of Gasperini, their coach. The elite coaches get results out of good players. Man United, I've said this before, that they're an elite team with elite players. They need an elite coach, and they haven't got one. And it shows, because there's no sense of this team having any blueprint or pattern of play which is going to win something. It's ironic for me that the only game they played really well this season was Leeds United at home on the opening day. Now, Leeds are the one team that will attack every team they play, so it's great for Man United, because United love teams that attack them at Old Trafford. Everybody else is sat back and defending. United can't break them down because they don't have a plan, they don't have to do it. So they're relying on all these great players to find the way themselves. And so far they've got away with it because Ronaldo or maybe Bruno Fernandes has got them out of a hole. That won't carry on forever. And against better teams, Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, maybe Villarreal, Atalanta away, we'll find it out.
Mark, I just want to switch gears slightly. I know I'd be able to have this conversation with you for a while. Jadon Sancho was so good at Borussia Dortmund, such a fun, exciting young player to watch. He's done nothing since joining Manchester United. What's going on? What are you hearing behind the scenes?
Well, obviously, when he didn't have a great summer in the Euros with England, there was a couple of fitness issues, and I just don't think he's kicked on from the Euros. And I think people at United have found that he's struggled to adjust to the pace of the Premier League right now, and he's not quite there yet. I think he arrived without that kind of sharpness that you'd expect from a player of his quality. And I think it's taken time, and you watch him play, and he's playing out of position. He's best on the right flank, and he's playing more on the left flank. Again, maybe Solskjaer has this master plan for Sancho that we don't know about, but it doesn't seem to be working for him. So I think he needs to get fitter. He doesn't look 100% fit to me. And I think that, give it a month, maybe you might start seeing something of Jadon Sancho, but I think he needs to play where he wants to play, where he's best at playing. But they've got so many attacking options that I think it's squeezing them all in and getting the best out of them. And when Marcus Rashford's fit, maybe then Sancho will go back to the right and Rashford plays on the left, but left we just don't know at this stage.
Final word on all of this to you, Craig.
Well, no, I just go back to the point about, Villarreal have lost the game, but you can clearly see and the players that he's coaching, and some of them are sort of misfits from other clubs in the Premier League and around Europe because they don't have a budget. But they stretched that whole pitch, and you could see they had been coached in the way they played. And as Mark said, there is always, in these scenarios, an air of desperation for Solskjaer when he's just bundling people on left, right and centre trying to get a result. And those results are just, keeping, the wolves from the door at the moment and keeping the Glazers happy, because they don't really want to sack him because, as Mark said, he keeps the ship sailing along without too many bumps, and he doesn't bang his fist and he doesn't shout. But ultimately, I think this only benefits, particularly in England, all the other big teams that are vying for the title, because they have what I would call proper coaches at the helm. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, that will prove to be the difference.
So Manchester United sitting in third in their group. Meanwhile, let's just check out what else happened in the Champions League today. In Group G, late controversy. Wolfsburg were winning, Sevilla getting a late penalty, Wolfsburg getting a man sent off. Check out that. A lot of unhappy people about the VAR decision in that game, which in the end would finish 1-1. Elsewhere, Salzburg go top of the table after a 2-1 victory against Lille.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Another bad day at the office for Barcelona, losing against Benfica by 3-0. That is back-to-back defeats then in the Champions League for Ronald Koeman's side. As welcome Julien Laurent to the show. Jules, it's kind of an indictment of where Barcelona are at the moment that they lose 3-0 against Benfica, and we don't even lead the show with it because it's almost kind of expected now.
Expected, I don't know, because this is a new low again. I mean, yeah, it's great. You beat Levante 3-0 at the weekend, but this is when it matters. This is the Champions League. I mean, it's another record for our friend. I don't even want to say his name anymore. This is a joke. This is the first time ever that Barcelona loses their opening two games in a Champions League campaign. I think the last time they lost two in a row was in the UEFA Cup back in 1972 against Porto, when you were playing home and away. Wow. And they were out straight away. This is how bad it is. This is embarrassing. This is an absolute joke. It was a shambles tonight. And yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe this is the new norm for them. But I still didn't expect it to be that bad. Another red card for Eric Garcia, who, by the way, now has had as many red cards than wins this season. I mean, what's that? What's that kind of stats? This is just embarrassing.
Obviously, all that goodwill that we saw after the win against Levante coming undone, Shaq. De Jong having another shocker. Oh, there's no one stepping up.
No, not at all. And listen, De Jong had two chances that I feel I had a good chance of finishing off myself.
Wow, Shaq, calm down.
That's how bad it was. But to Jules's point, or to yours, more saying that is, what else is there to say about Barcelona?
Yeah.
Like, the issues that are there financially, everybody's spoken about. We keep trying to find new ways to discuss Ronald Koeman when the fact of the matter is every time he gives us something to talk about, we take two steps back with a result and a performance like this. And it's a sad indictment of where that club is and how far they are to go. And while you talk about the two missed chances from Luke de Jong, which had they been taken, one was, I thought, was just outstanding defending. The second, maybe a little bit unlucky. It's no less than Benfica de Zoo.
Yeah, completely.
And on the back of being trounced by Bayern Munich, now all of a sudden we are shaping up to have genuine discussions about Bayern Munich, about Barcelona not going through to the group stage, to the knockout stage. Question marks as to whether they can even qualify for the UEFA Cup. And we are talking about one of European football's true giants.
Yeah.
That really is a sad day. The most surprising thing about all this with Barcelona is how angry Jules gets. I've not seen Jules get angry about anything but Barcelona and Ronald Koeman.
It's Ronald Koeman that definitely seems to be the trigger, who after the game, Jules said that he believed that he still had the players on side. He couldn't, though, say the same about the board. Did the team play like they were playing for their coach today?
I mean, I'm always very sceptical about that. He said we played great. We had great chances. The only difference was that they took theirs, we didn't took ours. Well, it's not as simple as that, my friend. And did the players play for him? I'm not sure. Luke de Jong said after the game, oh, yeah, the answer is not to sack the manager. Well, what else is he going to say? Or Frankie de Jong, one of the two de Jong, said that. Of course, it would be better. Listen, this is not a good team. We've said that before. Stevie thinks that whoever is the manager won't do a much better job. I disagree completely. This was a shambles. Again, this was... I mean, the substitutions that he made, I was like, what are you doing? It was still 1-0 up, but they were 1-0 down at the time. And he went like 3 in one go, and straight after, they conceded the second, and then even more all over the place. And I just think that there's no idea. There's just nothing there. Even the thing that he tries is not working out. I'm sure that in that dressing room, there's a lot of the players, and especially the most experienced one, the most senior one. I mean, he took Piqué off today. I don't know if it was an injury or not, but I'm not sure that if Piqué is not with him anymore, that surely can't be a good thing for him. It's just, I think it's really borderline pathetic now.
Big question, I suppose, Jules, is can Barcelona qualify for the Europa League?
Can you believe that we are actually having this debate, this conversation? Can they actually beat Dynamo Kiev in 3 weeks' time? Dynamo Kiev, that is. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. Not
Jules,
if
the hands
that
are
guy
off,
is still on the bench.
The hands are going.
when the hands go, it's because really something wrong happened. I said to you, I don't want to say his name. I'm not sure if he would be on the bench in 3 weeks' time or not. But if we are as down as can they beat Dynamo Kiev, this is again a new low for them.
Should we cheer him up?
You can try.
Cheer him up.
You can try.
24 hours ago, of course, we saw PSG beat Manchester City by 2-0.
Jules is smiling.
In case you missed it, ladies and gentlemen, here was Julian Laurent's reaction to Lionel Messi's goal.
The counter attack from Leo Messi, the one to with Kylian Mbappé. Messi! Here is the first goal, the one goal to make it 2-0 for PSG. Oh, what a counter attack. Please, I don't want to hear anymore. He hasn't scored yet.
Go on, Jules.
I mean, the thing is,
that's Jules
on the phone to Stevie. That's Jules on a phone call.
Jules, just put into context how big a moment that is for PSG fans.
Incredible, really, because, of course, he hadn't scored in the first in the first his first three appearances, and there was that pressure of getting that first one off, and for the people not to talk about that anymore, it was the fact that it was Manchester City at the Parc des Princes in an incredible atmosphere, and it's the fact that it's Leo Messi, the greatest ever, or one of the greatest ever, and I guess if he comes to your club and you've been a fan all your life and the family was in the stadium and you're there and you just want him to do something special, something magical, and exactly what he did, and while we caught that moment live on British television here, I lost it completely. I'm sorry. It was completely biased. I do not care, but it was very, very special.
This photo as well. Why is everybody's short so low, Shaka?
Well, what are you asking me?
I don't know.
Why are you asking me that question?
This is very similar when Mark is a guest on the Gab and Jules podcast. The three of them do that picture to afterwards.
So who is who in that? Who's Mark? Who's Jules? Who's Gab?
Mark, you were in Paris, of course, for that. I imagine your excitement wasn't quite at the same levels at Jules. But what was it like to be within that moment?
Yeah, listen, it was a really special night, and the atmosphere was fantastic at the Parc des Princes last night. I think. Yeah, it was 263 minutes that he hadn't scored a goal for PSG, which for Lionel Messi, that was his third longest goal drought at the start of the season. So I think you could see that he was beginning to get weighed down a bit by it. I think there were some touches that went astray in the first half. He did look a little bit under pressure, because the difference between Messi before the goal and after the goal was just like night and day. All of a sudden, he scored the goal and he was everywhere. He was making all his little runs again. He was a Leo Messi of 3 or 4 years ago. But it's a strange thing with the PSG. It's like going to the Knicks or the Lakers. It just feels like this event, because you've got so many star players, and the big screen's always showing fans and kissing, you know, the kiss cam and everything. It's a strange environment for a football ground. It's almost Hollywood-like basketball. It's strange, but it was a great atmosphere. And I think the one thing, the piece I wrote after the game was that as great as Messi's goal was, I think we're talking earlier about papering over cracks at Man United with Ronaldo. Messi's goal papered over the cracks that front three is not going to work. Long term, it is not going to work, because you need in a front three, one of the front three has to be prepared to do the hard work, to make the runs the ones doesn't want to make, to basically check his ego at the door. Now, Neymar's not going to do that. Messi should never be asked to do that, because it's Leo Messi. I thought Mbappe was trying to do that a little bit. He was making runs when normally he would run straight on goal, but he was looking for Messi. He was almost checking back, and where's Leo Messi? And if you're going to do that to Mbappe, you're taking away his qualities. And at times it looked like the three players were all diminished by the fact they were playing this front three. So obviously Mbappe will probably leave next summer, maybe even in January, so that might solve the problem. But they do need to find a third striker, a third forward, who will sacrifice himself to make sure Messi and the other one works. Because the three of them together, I don't think it's going to work long term. But listen, when you've got Leo Messi and he's playing like that, then you've got a chance.
I really want to do a deep dive with Mark as to why he hates the kiss cam, but I suppose we better talk about the front three at PSG, Jules. And do you have the same reservations?
Well, it's Paris, it's France.
Exactly. Who doesn't love a kiss cam? Jules, do you have the same concerns with that front three going forward?
Yes, of course. I think there's a lot of work to be done there. Can they do it? Can they actually be able to make it work and click, and not just clicking with the ball. We know, we saw the 1-2 between Messi and Mbappe, so we know this, that can work, but it's more out of possession when they don't have the ball, when they have to press or counter press. Can they do it? How often, how consistently, how efficiently can they do it? So this is all questions that we still have. I thought that game, you can play another 9 times and maybe City wins it a few more times. Maybe it's a draw because City had chances. I thought PSG defended really well at times, especially the two fullbacks, better than I expected them to do. But I thought they still were on the back foot a bit too much for my liking in a game at home at the Parc des Princes, albeit against one of the greatest sides in the world. So there's still a lot of work to be done, and especially for that front three. I don't know if it's a question of ego, like Mark's saying, and who leaves his ego at the door and who doesn't. But certainly it's without the ball and making sure that you're not too much much on the back foot because, again, City could have scored easily one or two and the game could have turned very differently. However, they didn't. They didn't take their chances. They also conceded two, could have conceded maybe a third one. And I thought overall, between Verratti's performance, Messi's goal, the way they defended as a team, the sort of plan that Pochettino had defensively, certainly, I thought it was still a pretty encouraging night for PSG, certainly at the start of the season.
I don't know the answer to this. We're going to find it out in a minute, Shank.
Okay.
Who are the favourites to win the Champions League?
I still think PSG are favourites because of that front three. As much as I say I think PSG are our favourites, I don't think they've played the best football in the competition thus far. I think the best football we've seen has been from Bayern Munich.
Yes.
But given that front three, and I understand the concern around them working together long term, it can't be anybody else.
PSG favourites, Mark. Is that fair from the bookies?
I think Liverpool have got a really good chance this year. I think this Liverpool team has got one big season left in it. I think they are getting a little bit old together, but I think obviously PSG are strong, but I do think Liverpool are more than a match for PSG. So I think Liverpool should be very much like joint favourites for PSG right now.
Who concerns you the most, Jules?
I think Bayern Munich, I think Liverpool, Mark is right. I think City as well. I mean, we saw them. It was not their night going forward and offensively taking those chances. But still, I think if you take Sterling and Mahrez out and put Foden and Gabriel Jesus and the way they played against Chelsea at the weekend, then I think it's a different City team. And maybe Guardiola should have done that or maybe kept them on the bench for the Liverpool game on Sunday. And I think that's right too. But I think that City will be there all around as well, that final. So I think PSG, Bayern, City, and Liverpool are for me the four. I don't know who is more favourite amongst those four, but certainly I expect them to be very close to winning it.
Last thing on this game, there's been a lot made of this, Shaka, in that the draft excluder role at the bottom of the wall was of course filled by one of the greatest players to ever play the game. What do you make of Lionel Messi?
I loved it, and I'll tell you why I love it as much as I do. Everybody, the great concern around this PSG team, and both Mark and Jules touched on it in moments ago, is around egos. Is around egos and people playing a role as needed in this team. Now, if you get Lionel Messi to lie at the bottom of a wall,
yep,
it says everything you need to know. If that's the example that he is setting, then you as a player, I don't care who else we're talking about, you have to be prepared to do whatever is asked of you if that's what it takes. Because if Lionel Messi is doing this, asking you to do anything at all, bar go on the kiss cam, you should be prepared. You should be prepared to do.
Jules, it's one of those pictures you want to shove in every kid's face, isn't it?
It is, and if you know the story, Marquinhos was in the wall, he looked around, everybody was either in the wall or marking someone apart from Leo Messi, and you can see him shouting, Leo, 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 come and lay down behind us. And Leo just go, yeah, and did it. And I agree with Shaq, I love it. I like the fact that he listened to his captain. He might not do it in 6 months' time. I don't know, we saw Neymar doing it in the following free kick as well. And I think it's good, and they also won that game because of that solidarity, and when I said play that as a team, they were united. They made the effort together, they were compact, they were as a group, as a team, and I think that also makes a difference in those big games.
What would you prefer, Mark? Kiss cam or lying down?
Definitely lying down, absolutely. As long as the ball doesn't hit me.
Mark, we spent a lot of time obviously on PSG. A word on Manchester City. Obviously, it's inevitable now. When they don't score, we're always going to bring up the fact they didn't have an out-and-out striker for much of that game. Big deal?
No, I don't think so. I saw them at Chelsea at the weekend. They didn't have a striker that day. They were comfortable with the best team. I think City know how to play without a striker. They've got great attacking quality. I thought Jack Grealish has made a difference. Kevin De Bruyne is still searching for form. I think City would be okay. Look, if they had a Harry Kane or a Lewandowski or a Ronaldo, they would be so much better. But I think City got enough attacking talent to overcome the absence of a 20-goal-a-season striker.
Jules, we did hear, though, Idrissa Gueye, didn't we, after the game, saying defensively they were comfortable throughout because of the lack of threat up front.
Yeah, I can see that. I do think that for me it's a non-debate, because while false nine brings you and brings to Pep Guardiola in the way his team played, maybe a traditional number nine would not do that. So, okay, maybe it would score a bit more goals and be a bit more efficient. But then you would lose a lot of the things that a false number nine, whether that's Foden, Sterling, De Bruyne, whoever plays in that position, can bring to Pep and the way Pep wants his team to play and to press. And I'm not sure a traditional number nine would do that. So I guess both have pros and cons. I agree with Mark, though. I don't think this is the issue here. Again, they can play that game another time against PSG with the false number nine and win it. So, yeah, they didn't take their chances on Tuesday. It's a shame. But again, I don't think that going and spend big money on a number nine in January would be the answer. I do think that this team is pretty special, even with a false nine.
And what kit will it be for tomorrow's Gab and Jules podcast, Jules?
I'm not on the show tomorrow, Dan. You will be sad to learn. It's my sister's wedding, so I'm off to France.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations. Oh, very nice. I hope you're going to dress up for it. Not one of those tatty old shirts you normally wear. Just a reminder, it's the Gab show. Pretty much as it is standard then. Jules is off at a wedding. Be sure to check it out, though. The latest one, of course, available on Thursday. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Meanwhile, the US men's national team squad was announced for those October World Cup qualifiers. The big story, considering what preceded it last month, Weston McKennie is back in the squad. However, there is no Christian Pulisic or Gio Reyna, both out because of injury. Well, for a lot more reaction to that squad and looking ahead to the qualifiers, be sure to check out the latest edition of Football America's Sebi and Herc, as always, breaking it down. That is it. Shall I cough now, Shaq?
Yeah, go on then.
I'm going to cough now.
You did a good job of holding
there
it.
There we go.
Though,
that's it. That's okay. Nobody noticed. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Jules is back with us, as is Shaka, to answer some of your tweets. Be sure to stay tuned. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Shaka Hislop is here, as is Julien Laurent.
A well-dressed Julien Laurent.
I know. And you're well-dressed as well.
I'm always well-dressed.
I felt like you were just looking for a compliment there.
No. This is how I dress regularly. I'm not used to seeing Jules in a jacket.
What we learned today on today's show, which I'm sure will surprise... we learned today that will surprise no one, is that Mark Ogden hates the kiss cam at sporting events. Which got me thinking, have you ever been involved in a kiss cam, Shaq, or anything like that on the big screen?
No, Dan. I really don't know why you would think I would be.
Well, because of the sporting events that you've attended during your time. I wonder they pick out... Look, there's the Shaka Hislop.
No.
No?
No, Dan, never.
No kiss cam?
No kiss cam, Dan.
What about you, Jules?
No, although being French and from Paris, I would invite the kiss cam on me, of course. But I really hope that you had an old video of Shaka showing the kiss cam and that he actually did it. I was really hoping that that was coming next, but no, unfortunately.
Nobody wants to see.
I'd love to be on the kiss cam. I'd love it, Shaq, on the big screen. I'm thinking, what if I've never done a kiss cam. I was on The Price is Right.
Right.
Do you remember that show?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah. I was in the audience for that.
Okay.
I was obsessed about being on TV.
Oh, right. Yeah, I could never tell Dan.
My girlfriend got called down, my ex-girlfriend.
Oh, well, she won the big prize.
Yeah, she
dumped the shit away. She won the prize and
she won a boat and left me. And then I had an audition to be on the Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah?
But I didn't, they didn't think I was smart enough.
Well.
What was the question I didn't know the answer to? Who was William Shakespeare's wife?
I didn't know that.
No? No? Do you know William Shakespeare's wife, Jules? No. No? See, none of you would be good enough for the Wheel of Fortune. Yeah, shut up. Someone just told you that. Don't give us that.
No!
Right.
I know
away from my desperation to be the centre of attention on television. Let's start. Is Ole still a United manager because of Ronaldo, Jules?
It's a bit too simplistic to put it that way. Certainly, Ronaldo has bailed him out tonight for sure. But he would not have been sacked. They would have played without Ronaldo and they still have a competitive team. But I think the debate is wider than just, is it because of Cristiano that he's still in position? A lot of us don't think that he's good enough with the ball, but we also know that he's got support in the media, within the dressing room, at the club, because he's a good management manager. Is that enough for a club like United? I don't think so, personally. But you would need more than a couple of bad results for him to get sacked. So the answer is no, I guess. It's not just Cristiano. There's more factors to it.
What was interesting that Mark said during the show is basically that Manchester United like Ole because after Van Gaal and Mourinho, he's not going to rock the boat.
Correct.
He's not going to come out and say anything that particularly is going to upset the shareholders or the board. How aware are the players then of that situation?
Oh, very aware. They are very aware of the situation as it pertains to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his standing within the club. I also, and maybe Mark might know differently, but I don't think Solskjaer can command the kind of respect from big egos in that dressing room, not necessarily Ronaldo, but if we're talking about Paul Pogba or some of the others, and asking them to do jobs or correcting them or whatever needs to be done, I just see them kind of overlooking it.
Really?
And I don't see him having the kind of presence that the other two mentioned. So while the other two might be able to be more firm-handed with some of the players, get more respect from the players, the board are happy with what he brings or doesn't, as the case may be.
Is Cristiano Ronaldo, Jules, the most clutch player of all time? Someone sent me this stat. Most goals in the 90th minute or later in Champions League history, Cristiano Ronaldo with 12. Next up, Lionel Messi with 6.
Yeah, I saw that stat as
maybe
well.
I don't think
there's anyone. But still, I think clutch is the perfect word. I think he's the greatest finisher of all time and certainly the most clutch, of course, because not just because of the stat, although it's a great stat, if you think about it, 12 goals, a 90th minute or beyond in a competition like this, but if you also look at the goals that and the amount of goals he scored in knockout stages of the competition, he's way better than anybody else. And I just think that when it matters, he's done it so many times. And this is his competition too. So yeah, I think this is a really good one. He's the most clutchest player in Champions League.
He is the clutchest.
That is official.
Let me just say officially, that's a dumb stat.
What's a dumb stat?
How many goals you scored in 90th minute?
Okay.
So if you score in the 83rd, it don't count as much?
I don't know. It's Mike Rodriguez who sent me that.
I'm just saying.
Take it up with him. I just use that as an example when we're talking about...
I have no problem with the stat or somebody sending you the stat. It's just dumb.
Okay. All right. All right, Craig. Calm down. How do you say clutch in French, Jules?
Clutch.
Oh, that's a good... Clutch. Yeah, clutch is the word.
We'd say what?
Decisive.
Decisive.
No, that's not what Jules said.
I think that's, that's the,
Jules
the best
didn't
word
say decisive.
To put it.
He said decisive.
No. Say it again, Jules.
Decisive.
No.
I said decisive.
That's what I wanted to hear.
You murdered that. You killed that word.
No, Jules.
Oh, my God.
Every way.
That's what I wanted. Oh, goodness.
Cristiano Ronaldo, decisive.
Let's go, teach.
No, please. Please.
Apparently, our graphic machine's broken, so you can't see the tweets, so I promise you they're real. Barca's loss against Benfica or Real Madrid's loss to Sheriff Shack. What was worse?
Barca's to Benfica.
What? Real Madrid losing at home against a side that's never been in the Champions League before.
I bet you Real Madrid goes through to the knockout stage.
Oh, I see. So you're talking big picture as opposed to just both of those on their own.
I'm a big picture kind of guy, Dan.
Oh, you are, Shaq, yes.
Right. So I think
I don't know why you're saying it in that weird face.
I think while you could dismiss you can play a way out of Real Madrid can play their way past that loss to Sheriff. I think the Barcelona's has far bigger implications.
Jules, how does Barca go about fixing this mess? Get rid of Ronald Koeman first. That'll be the first thing you need to do.
Just trying to get Jules angry now.
Bring some sort of Frenchman in.
Angry Jules.
Yeah, I would do a better job. So, yes, please, get the... Wow. I said to you, I don't say his name anymore. So, get
listen
him out.
To that.
Get him out. Get him out. And then that would be a first step towards getting better.
But it's Atleti this weekend, and you can't take over this weekend because it's your sister's wedding.
Oh, that's right.
So where's your commitment to Barcelona?
Yeah. So I said to Johan, I just had to text Laporta back saying, listen, amigo, I can't do this weekend for obvious reasons. But from Monday, I'm on the training ground with my whistle and, you know, and my shorts and my shirt. It's fine. Yeah.
What role do you have to play in the wedding, Jules?
I've got a reading at church on Friday.
Oh.
And then my children all have something to do, bringing the rings and stuff. But yeah, I'm going to focus on my reading to make it as best as possible.
Oh, yeah, very beautiful. Where is the wedding?
In Ile de Ré, so near La Rochelle, where we go on holidays, as you know now.
You should do the reading.
The weather,
reading
in the hopefully.
You should do the reading in the style of your awful Lionel Messi commentary.
Jules.
Really over the top and aggressive.
I enjoyed it, Jules. I enjoyed Lionel.
That's good. And do you approve of your brother-in-law to be?
Yes, very much so. Lionel is called, and one of my sisters is Camille, the one getting married. So, yeah, I wish them a lot of love and a long life together, for sure.
You can tell us the truth, Jules.
Oh, beautiful.
You can tell us the truth.
He doesn't like him, really, does he?
Yeah.
He thinks he's a bit arrogant.
Yeah.
No, I love him. He's a great player, too. He's a great player.
Shaka, have you ever had a manager that everyone in the team already knew was going to be sacked? Does that have any effect on how the players behave on or off the pitch?
Ooh, let me see. I can't think of Harry got sacked my first spell at West Ham. Not sacked. I had two managers walk away. Mark McGee walked away.
Right.
Kevin Keegan walked away. Harry was sacked. Harry was sacked at Portsmouth as well. Or did he walk away the second time at Portsmouth? So it's difficult because with Harry, he was liked. He was really liked in the dressing room. In both instances, West Ham and at Pompey, though, again, I think he walked away at Pompey. The dressing room didn't really change as a result.
Okay.
So that you know, so I can't speak to that.
Jules, it's too cool and it's boring football. Wow. Running out of luck now.
That's harsh.
I'm not sure luck is the right word here, and maybe it's not of everybody's taste, but it is still the best team in Europe, or certainly the well last season. And again, it's too simple to say, oh, he's running out of luck, he's boring, etc. The game against City, and he took it on himself because he made mistakes in his team selection. The formation, tactics were wrong. Against Juventus tonight, it was a very, very different game that they could have at least got a point out of it, even if with the ball and they had a lot of it, they were not as efficient as they should have been. But I still think that this is a game that they could have got easily a draw from. So no, I don't think the luck has gone. I think there's a lot of work to do, especially to put Lukaku in better conditions and better situation. And I think they're working on that. But I still think that defensively they will be strong and they will always have something going forward because of all the talent they have offensively.
Jules, does Ramos go into PSG starting 11 when he comes back and possibly Marquinhos move into midfield, or does it stay the same as against City?
It's interesting because we're expecting that to be back after the international break, potentially, and I think he's getting near to full fitness now, so that's good news. Then you can play three at the back, and this is an option that Pochettino has. Otherwise, you've got three in Sergio Ramos, Kimpembe and Marquinhos for two positions. I think we can forget Marquinhos in midfield now, although I really like the idea, and I still think that there's something to it, but we saw Verratti playing as a holding midfielder against City, and that was brilliant. So I think I guess you pick between Kimpembe and Sergio Ramos. Kimpembe hasn't always been great this season, both in the league and in Europe, so maybe there's something there for Ramos. But I just don't think that right now he will go straight into the starting 11.
Final point, Xhaka. I put on Twitter, of course, earlier today, Everton scoring 5 past you.
Yeah.
Dan pointed out you and Don scored goal together. This is while you're at West Ham. Yeah. What was the percentage split on whose fault it was?
Oh, in that 5?
Yes.
Don scored one of the goals?
Yeah, he scored an own goal.
That was 99% Don.
Oh, Don?
Boy.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. I accept 1% because I shouldn't let Don score from any range.
Right.
In any circumstance, regardless of whether he's on my team or not.
Yes.
But it's 99% Don.
Nice one. And what did you say? What happened after the Everton game?
I think we went away to Blackburn and we lost. I think it was 7-1.
That was a good week, Shai.
Yeah. It was great.
Ah, oh, good stuff. That is it. Jules, have a great wedding, mate. Enjoy yourself.
Enjoy it, Jules.
Have a lovely time.
Thank you again. Thank you very much.
Good luck to all the Laurent clan. How many people will be there? A big wedding? Big?
A lot.
But it sounds like it's a big posh.
120 people. So, yeah, big wedding. Big party. Let's party.
Oh, yeah, let's party. Enjoy. We will be partying tomorrow on the show, won't we, Shank?
Will we?
Well, I'm off.
Oh, okay.
Are you off as well? You're going to a wedding?
No, I'm here tomorrow, but I'm going on Friday.
Do you have a reading or anything?
No, I'm not reading.
Not important.
No.
Oh, what, is there going to be a kiss cam?
No, I'm there for alcohol support.
Oh, well, that'll be good. Take Steve as your plus one. All right, bye.